And this question, after one has observed the sensations in the body and now sees the body as a mass of vibrations, what is the next step one should take in their meditation? So, as I mentioned before, you know, the first stage of meditation is learning how to bring the mind away from the external excitement and to rest it, you know, in the present moment, you know, in the breathing in the body. That is sort of the first stage. We call the stage of tranquility, where the hindrances are not too strong. There still might be some wandering thoughts, there still might be some pains, but be able to kind of watch them better and not get too lost in them, kind of let them go, and you can feel this gradual kind of centeredness and more pleasant kind of calmness entering the nervous system. And so that's sort of the first stage of the meditation practice. And the second stage, as you mentioned, you know, or as we're going to go into more probably tomorrow, is tuning in through the, you know, the flow of sensations in the body and opening up, or what is called opening up to the flow of impermanence, or opening up the field of the body to feel not only the breath but other things that are also coming and going. Yet the mind is held stable by the feeling of the breath sort of there in the back of the mind. It doesn't take too much effort to notice the breath anymore. It's kind of just staying there much of the time. And then that's when you can easily observe other things coming and going. You don't have to put so much energy just on watching the breath. You see, in the beginning you have to, because the mind is like a wild dog running around. But with practice, when you develop the ability to keep bringing the mind back, and gradually that dog starts running around so much and starts to sit down and, you know, and rest. So then you can notice other things. You don't have to pay so much attention to the breath because the mind is already calm. Then you tune in, you open up to the flow of impermanence, and especially in the beginning in the body. So you can either deliberately move your attention from the head down to the feet, to the feet back up to the head, or just let it gradually notice and feel things. Because when the mind gets calm, it can notice many, many things occurring at the same time. But it won't be disturbed by it because of that bedrock of tranquility, that being the nervous system having been tranquilized through either watching the breath, developing the anapanasati. And then what is next? Of course, you open up to impermanence. You feel that the body is, you know, just a mass of just changing sensations. I mean, the earth, fire, water, air, the four elements that are constantly, you know, arising and vanishing. And what's after that? Well, you have to see this body as just a conditioned thing. You know, as I mentioned, just it's not really yours, it's a body. And you just develop the awareness that, you know, there is this body. There's this impermanent body. And you're tuning in to feeling and noticing it, just changing aches and pains and so many other sensations. But you're not grasping at them, not trying to hold them, not trying to push them away, just arising and passing away. And you understand that this is just the nature of the body. And you try not to tightly cling to it as my body. It was produced by nature. You didn't ask for it. Mother and father created it through partly from them, but your mind was, seeking some place to be born, and it happened to be attracted to that particular womb. And it's powered by karma. So you see, it's all happening. There's no you or I actually deciding to do it. And so that's the kind of what is called nibbida, detachment, that you have to cultivate at the same time. And then you open up not only body sensations, but sounds. Sounds are arising and vanishing. Even your thoughts are arising and vanishing through the mind. And you open up to the whole sixfold sense field. Or you contemplate the five aggregates. This is form, feeling, perception, volition, consciousness. Or you can contemplate, this is hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, touching, and thinking, as they just arise and vanish. And so you tune into that, you open up to that. That is the next stage, not only sensations in the body, but opening up to also include sounds, and especially the thoughts, the urges, the intentions, and so on that are coming up in the mind. So you contemplate nama rupa, basically. Mind and body. This is a process of mind and body. And you see the interconnection between sensations and your feelings and thoughts. You see how they're all kind of interconnected, one causing the other one, and so on, but they're just coming and going. And you're not asking for any of it. It's going on under its own power. And so you get some understanding about the anatta also. And there's no I that's really doing any of that. It's just being powered by karma, by the laws of nature, and of course the desire, the ignorance, of course, in the mind, the greed, hatred, and delusion that's still in the mind. And you contemplate that. And you understand that, when you die, that greed, hatred, and delusion is still in the mind, and the process continues. But anyway, you just hold that kind of wisdom. That's the wisdom. So you're cultivating mindfulness, concentration, and then wisdom. Wisdom is that missing link. Wisdom is the crowning gem or jewel, or the power of wisdom, has the power to detach the mind. So anyway, I'm going to talk more about that probably later, but generally it's that. Once you use the breathing to get in the body, and you use the body to develop a subtler attention to various subtler types of sensations, the four elements, you contemplate how it's just impermanent. But then you gradually open up, and any sounds that come through that, you see that as just arising and vanishing. And then thoughts, it's just an interplay of sensations, sounds, thoughts, could be smells, tastes also. But in meditation, mostly the three most common ones are body sensations, thoughts, and sounds. And then you start cultivating the wisdom, practicing even Dhamma Nupassana, contemplation, five aggregates, six senses, seeing them as anicca, dukkha, and anatta, so that the mind will be able to let go of that personal grasping and identification which keeps our mind bound to the wheel of reactions. And, during mindfulness of breath, my attention goes to sensations in the body where the breath touches the body, but my mind remains unattended and wanders through thoughts. Is there a practice that could pacify the mind? Yes, ideally, You know, we use the breathing to, you know, to get centered in the body, and ideally one should keep following the breath or use the breathing as a primary object long enough until you can see the complete cycle of breathing. You can see the whole in-breath from beginning to end, and to feel the little space in between the pause, and then to feel the whole out-breath from beginning to end, and the brief pause, and to be able to follow the breath, and the in-cycle of breath to the pause, the out-cycle of breath to the pause, and be able to follow that for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes without being interrupted much by distractions. And if one can, that is a good level of tranquility, and to be able to maintain that that contact with the breathing, and then just be aware of other things that start coming and going. But for each person, the amount or degree of that sort of tranquility will may be different, about the ability to keep the breath in the awareness, at the same time notice other things that are coming and going. You know, at that point where you would either stay longer with just the breathing or start to open up in the body, that's really basically up to you, but up to each person, when you might do that. But if you're waiting around to get perfect samadhi and to attain these jhanas that are, you know, people are fascinated with, you know, for lay people, you might be waiting for a long time. And from my own experience, you don't really have to wait that long, because even with a basic kind of tranquility, even not to the strength of jhana, you can still develop a very sharp and keen awareness of, you know, arising and vanishing, which will cause the thoughts to keep down. The more things you can notice, the less time you have to get lost in your thoughts. Especially the physical types of vibrations, so physical sensations in the body, sounds. And the more you can notice, the less time you have to get lost in your thoughts. You get lost in your thoughts because nothing else is holding your attention. So you can either use the breathing to hold the attention, or you can use other sensations, the flow of the impermanence, to hold the attention. And the quicker you can see the thoughts will just disappear. You can have a stream of thoughts going through the mind, but it won't really disturb you. If you're still grounded to the body and breathing, even though you have a steady stream of thoughts going through the mind, you're not grasping them, and you're just letting them just arise and vanish, and so they don't really cause you any disturbance, because part of your mind is anchored in the breathing. So the more that you have a constant physical sensation in the back of the mind, like the breath, or even the feeling of your hands touching together, or the buttocks pressing the cushion, any sort of physical, like earth element vibration that can hold the mind steady. So even though if thoughts are going through the mind, you won't get tired, because you're being infused with awareness through the attention of the body, or the breathing in the background. And eventually those thoughts will wear out as you stop paying attention to them and identifying with them. Then the stream of thoughts will slow down and cease by itself. So there's a couple of different ways that one can approach that. The problem of stilling the thoughts. And it may be different for each person because of the different sort of karmic background and experience that different people have. But the reason why thoughts disturb us is because we keep clinging to them and identifying with them. My sadness, my happiness, my this, my that, my ideas, or our anger, or greed. So by cultivating the wisdom to see the emptiness of those thoughts and the danger of those thoughts, then the mind stops and seeing them as not me, not mine, not myself, then gradually they'll peter out, like letting the steam off a pressure cooker. Pressure cooker builds up all that steam, you open the little valve and in the same way with the momentum of thoughts and so on going through our mind. Wisdom is the valve that releases that pressure of clinging of I, me and mine. It's the clinging of I, me and mine that causes the pressure, like the pressure in a cooker. And our wisdom helps to open that valve and let that steam out, that steam of grasping, the steam of ignorance. And then when all that steam is let out, there's just the tranquility, the awareness left. When sensations take place, what needs to be noted? The nature of the sensation, the moment of arising, peaking and ending. Well, when you notice the sensation, of course, first you are aware that it's a sensation, and then it will have that contact, that moment of contact, and then there's feeling. Try to identify the feeling. Is this a pleasurable sensation? Or pleasant feeling? Or is this a painful feeling? An unpleasant feeling? Or is it a neutral feeling? So, the Vedanusati is, first you identify. You identify it because of the mind's reaction. If it's an unpleasant, painful feeling, the mind will be kind of contracting and trying to pull away. You can see that clearly, that kind of aversion. That I don't like that. So you identify, this is a painful feeling. And you keep that in your awareness. But especially look at the mind and try to relax the mind that's tensing up because of this painful sensation. And try to relax the mental tension by seeing that, this sensation may be painful, but it's also impermanent. It's not going to last forever. And you try to see how it's building up, how it's arising, comes to a peak or a climax, and it starts to decrease, change. It may not totally disappear, but it might kind of decrease in intensity to where you can then leave it alone and come back and continue to back into your present moment flow, or come back to the breathing. So, the first thing is to see what effect it's having in your mind. Or if it's a pleasant feeling, you can see how the mind is trying to grasp at it, wanting to hold it. Whether it's a pleasant feeling from a sound, or from a visible object or a smell or taste or the body feeling, or even thoughts in your mind. A painful thought or memory that comes in your mind, or a pleasant one, you're planning your vacation or something. And so you just identify it as a pleasurable feeling, painful feeling, or a neutral feeling. The neutral feelings are the ones that we don't really react to. So if it's not particularly a pleasant one or a painful one, then it's just a neutral one. But those normally just, our mind normally doesn't pay much attention to them, and so they don't really cause much problem in the mind. But it's especially the painful and the pleasant ones is the mind is grasping at them and then triggering off all kinds of thoughts about the sensation. So, you know, in all those cases, we have to train our mind to see sensations as simply impermanent. How these sensations arise, because our muscle tissue and bones are rubbing and pressing together, other things, it produces sensations. Or sounds hitting the ear, producing perceptions. Also, it's the perception of an object that we might identify an object, and then we see that craving or desire for it, or aversion. And we have to kind of just watch that process occur. But you can only do that if you've reached some degree of tranquility by previously working with the breathing and the body. During meditation, I fell asleep. Oh, poor. How can I overcome this? Again, sleep is one of the nivaranas, the five hindrances. And out of all of the hindrances, sleep is the absolute worst one. Because in sleep, nothing can be done. Or when maybe you're not really sleeping, but the mind is just drowsy and foggy, and there's no awareness, and you've lost the awareness of the present moment. So what can be done is, well, you have to contemplate the causes for sleep. Did you get enough sleep the night before? Or also, too much thinking causes sleep. This thinking uses a lot of energy in our brain. So especially if you worry a lot, you have a lot of worries, or anger or other emotions that you dominate your mind, then that drains our energy. And so the mind's kind of defense, in order to get away from that, it might go to sleep and try to forget its problems. And it could be because the body's just starved of oxygen, and so there's a number of things that you can try. The first is check your posture. 9 times out of 10, you won't be sitting straight. You will have slouched. So the first thing when you notice that is to take a deep breath, fill up the lungs. The lungs are like a cork. When you fill them up, and the body just naturally straightens back up. A cork floating back up to the surface of the water. And try to maintain that straight posture. It's impossible to go to sleep if you're sitting straight. Although there might be a Guinness Book of Records somebody who did that, but generally, if you're sitting perfectly straight, it's impossible to go to sleep. But the moment the chin starts coming down, then it's just a downhill slide from there. That's why I encourage and keep repeating over and over and over again. Pay attention to the chin. Pay attention to the posture. Make that your primary object of concentration before wanting to get too much into the breath. Because if you're too much close to the breath, you won't feel the body, and that can happen. If the body is in front of the mind, then whenever the body starts to slouch, we'll be able to correct it before it's gone too far. But also, if you don't have any exercise and you have a weak spinal muscles and neck muscles, you won't be able to resist that pull of gravity. So that's why I also encourage people to practice things like yoga exercises, especially to help to strengthen the back muscles, and like doing the neck turning and back and forth to strengthen the muscles in the neck, so you can resist that pull of gravity that's always pulling the bones down. And of course, overeating can also be a cause of drowsiness. But you know, there's just a lot of different factors that may cause it. But the first thing that you should try is straighten up the posture, take a few deep, slow breaths. After breathing in, hold the breath in the lungs as long as you comfortably can. And that will hold the mind in the present moment awake. And that might be enough to burn out the veil of drowsiness. Do that for a few times. And if the mind is still sleepy, then you can either try rubbing your Buddha. The Buddha, you know, gave the tips for you either like massage the muscles that connect the brain to the body. You know, massage them, maybe to get the energy flowing more in that. Or even kind of massage the face a little bit, maybe do some head turning. That may wake you up. If that doesn't work, then you can stand up. Or you can try opening your eyes a little bit. So if you have a lot of trouble with sleepiness, you can kind of just let the eyes open about halfway. But not look out of them, but just allow light to come in. And that is also can be a help to overcome the sleepiness. And if that doesn't work, then do stand up and do standing meditation. Because the danger, the fear of falling down will be enough to keep you awake. And also, don't be too comfortable. If you're too comfortable, especially leaning back on something, that's a guarantee probably you're going to fall asleep. So that's why it's always recommended. Don't use any supports. Don't get too comfortable in the meditation, because the pain or discomfort at least keeps you awake. That's better than sleep. At least with pain and discomfort, you can cultivate some ways to deal with it and develop your endurance to kind of endure it longer. But with sleepiness, there's nothing. So it's good. If you're going to sit on a chair, don't lean against the back of the chair, because I know there's some people who have some chronic back problems maybe, and they have to do that. But otherwise, that's a major reason for falling asleep, is you get too comfortable. You can get comfortable in the sitting position, but the more you practice, the more the muscles and bones and joints get used to the sitting posture, then gradually you'll be able to sit longer and longer without those pains and things disturbing you so much. And how can I catch myself with the first signs? Again, the chin. Make your chin your object of concentration, if that's your problem. You know, focus on the chin. Or, I got the remedy. Bring a stack of books in and balance them on your head. Because the moment the head starts going down, you'll feel those books sliding off and you'll wake up. Or when they crash on the ground, you'll wake up. Or maybe, and especially if you're sitting at home, you know, alone, and that's your problem. You know, it may sound funny, but no, it's very good. You know, it works. Or get one of these neck braces for people who have broken necks. You know, these something like that, right? It fits under the chin and just kind of stretches the neck straight and keeps it up. Wear one of those when you meditate. At least for a while, until you can then gradually go without it. So there's things that, you know, you can do. But just don't sit there and keep succumbing to sleepiness all the time, because meditation is not going to go anywhere. Or go sit at the edge of a linda, a well, a deep well. Then when you start, or on the edge of a three-story building or something. But, you know, that's why I encourage people to, you know, if you do some yoga exercises before meditating, hopefully that will help you to stay a little bit more awake, because of the electrical energy in the body can flow more freely. If your joints are stiff, your muscles are stiff, then that electrical energy of the body can't really flow freely, and it gets slowed down. And that's why we might then tend to get drowsy, because the delay of those signals reaching the brain. So the more flexible you are, and so on, and also with like the deep breathing that helps, then that's also a way. What is the goal of the meditation? Is it to purify the mind? If so, how meditation purifies the mind? Well, of course, in the Buddha's teaching, the ultimate goal of the Noble Eightfold Path. You know, it's not just a meditation, it's about, you know, incorporating the other aspects of Noble Eightfold Path into one's life, sila, dana, sila, and you know, there's various right, you know, renunciation and so on, practicing metta. It's the first goal is probably to stop being so neurotic and learn how to be able to rest and be more centered and peaceful and not getting so agitated so much. That's what I would say would be the first sort of goal. And then once the nervous system has stopped being so agitated, stopped being so angry and upset and greedy and bossy and so on, more sort of calm, then of course that's also a purification of the mind, but you know, that has many levels. And then developing insight. Again, you know, the Buddha gave a sutta, again, I'm not going to go into it all now, but like the Ratha Vinita Sutta, that, you know, what's the good of practicing a purification of sila? Well, you practice purification of sila to reach purification of the mind. You purify the mind to reach purification of view. And you reach purification of view to be able to see what is the true path and what is the false path. And then to develop knowledge and vision of the way, that means insight and wisdom. So, you know, the ultimate goal of meditation, of the Dhamma, of course, is to free the mind of greed, hatred, and delusion, to break all the fetters chaining the mind to sense up. But that doesn't happen all automatically fast for most people, and it's a gradual process. But you know, the first goal of meditation should just be learning how to relax a bit and live more in the present moment without being so obsessed with the past and future. And then gradually As you do that, you'll naturally, your concentration and mindfulness naturally deepens, and then all other types of realizations and stages of purification naturally unfold from that. But if the mind is still sunk in ignorance, and, you shouldn't be expecting or too greedy to attain a total nibbana right away, because that greed for it will disturb the mind. But instead you work toward from where you are, you work stage by stage, level by level. The ultimate goal, of course, is there in the back of our mind. We don't lose sight of that, but you still have to be in the present moment, dealing with present moment types of defilements and blockages. The meditation purifies the mind by cultivating wisdom. The actual active part of meditation is mindfulness and concentration, but it's the wisdom of seeing impermanence, suffering and no self that goes deeper to purifying the attachment and grasping and that we keep caught in that karmic web. Please explain the difference in mindfulness, awareness, and concentration. Actually, I would reorder those and say mindfulness, concentration, and awareness. And again, there's a lot of teachers and different scholars, and they define these terms in different ways. And there's different ways that you can define mindfulness, because there's different levels of mindfulness as well as concentration. But mindfulness is that alert state of mind. It's just alert, resting in the nervous system, and is alert up. There's a sensation here, a sensation here, a thought here, a sound here. It's, had the presence of mind. And then you can direct that presence of mind to a certain object, such as the breath, let's say. And the Buddha taught anapanasati. He taught mindfulness of breathing. He didn't say concentration on breathing. He said mindfulness of breathing. So actually, concentration is just uninterrupted mindfulness. There's only mindfulness. Concentration is a state that you arrive at through the practice of mindfulness, but you can limit that mindfulness to a specific object, such as the breath, and keep remembering that. So that's one type of mindfulness, which we might call concentration. But it's mindfulness. That means you're mindful of each moment of the breath going in and out. And at the same time, you're mindful when there's some distraction threatening to steal your mind away. But you're primarily trying to keep the mind on one object to gain this kind of more one-pointed concentration. But the other form of mindfulness is this moment-to-moment mindfulness that's not directed to a particular object, but can just notice different things as they, whatever primarily takes your attention, briefly be mindful of that, let go of it, and something else arises to take your attention, you let go of that, something else arises to take your attention, you let go of that, and you develop that ability to just simply note whatever is taking the attention of the mind, you note it, release it, and something else arises, and you tune in to the flow of impermanence. So that's also, mindfulness. Or there's the four foundations of mindfulness, where you're cultivating that kind of attention to the body, the feelings, mind states, But the four foundations of mindfulness is more this development of the moment-to-moment attention and about impermanence. So when mindfulness and concentration are balanced, or once you use an object for concentration, let's say if you use the breath, and you're concentrating the breath here, or you're concentrating the breath here, as I've been suggesting, and you can follow that long enough without distractions, then the mind, you know, comes to rest in the present moment. And the mind becomes concentrated. So there's a difference between concentrating, which is like a verb, and concentrated, which is like an adverb. It means it's a state. And that's the goal of samadhi practice, is to become concentrated. Once you become concentrated, the object can disappear. You don't need the object anymore. And the mind is just resting in the present moment. And that is when you can clearly see other things, you know, tune into the impermanence. The object did its job. It has its certain function, but it's got its, you know, there's a time to drop it. And so we use an object to practice concentration, but once we get concentrated, the mind is concentrated. That means it's not being distracted by any hindrances. It's not wavering. Objects may come and go, but the mind's not being disturbed by it. The mind's not moving. Objects are moving, the mind's not moving. And so that's the kind of mind, ideally, that you practice the Vipassana with. Because it's grounded in that stillness. And then awareness starts to develop. So mindfulness and concentration is a more of a kind of an active thing. You're trying to be mindful, you know, trying to concentrate. But once you attain that concentration, and the mind stops grasping at various objects, and you tune into the flow of impermanence, then the mind kind of expands. There's a feeling of the mind kind of expanding because it's no longer kind of contracted in the body and obsessed with me and I'm trying to control things and the idea of looking out the eyeballs. And the mind gets more expanded. And that's what I say, that's when consciousness actually transforms into awareness. That means it's no longer identifying and clinging on to individual objects. There's more of an expansive space in which you can notice many, many, even hundreds and thousands of things occurring even simultaneously almost. But there's no friction, there's no any blockage. It's just like the space called the big sky mind. The mind becomes like the sky. And so the sky out there, birds fly by and poop, planes, fly by and pollute the air, trucks go by, people, so many things are going through the sky. But the sky is not fighting. The sky says, hey, don't come in here, go away, go away. No, the sky is just an immense space. That's awareness. The mind can become like that. And that's what I call awareness. In the sense of I has basically faded out of the mind at that point. Maybe not totally, but at least, little by little. And that's simultaneously with the reduction of suffering. There's no more fighting, struggling, clinging, grasping. And ideally that's why. So we use mindfulness, the active part of mindfulness, and struggle to concentrate. But then that's where the wisdom helps us. The wisdom helps us to see these objects that we're clinging to as being anicca, dukkha, and anatta. And that helps to let go of them. To let go of the the grasping. And that's when the mind immediately starts expanding. Anyway, we'll get more on that later. I need clarification for the following. Do I have to wait until the breath becomes subtle to focus on body sensations? Do I have to focus on the body sensations until they disappear? Is there any particular order to watch the sensations? Example, from the head to the toe. Actually, in tomorrow morning's probably meditation, I'm going to give a guided meditation on sort of scanning through the body to feel more sensation, to give you an idea how that can be done. About waiting until the breath becomes subtle before focusing on body sensations. Yes, the more the breath becomes refined and subtle, that means, and when you can still feel it, that means the mind is also, you know, concentrated and clear. The more subtle sensations of the breath you can notice, then you will naturally start feeling other things also. And noticing thoughts going through your mind. But again, how long do you have to wait before the mind becomes subtle? How subtle is the breath? Some teachers might say you must wait until this nimitta rises and this and that. But if you're going to wait around for that, you may be waiting a long time. Sorry. You know, especially lay people who lead busy lives, it's very difficult to develop that subtlety of breath that turns into a nimitta, and you focus on that. But one can do that, one could do that. But then that is enough, because you can get too attached to the nimitta, but once the nimitta comes, that means you've gained the concentration, then let go of the nimitta and the breath. And that is, if you're going to practice vipassana. If your goal is to attain formless jhana, then you stay with the nimitta. You see, there's different goals. You have to be clear on which one that you sort of want. You know, there's talk about the formless jhanas. Wow! You know, and so people naturally get fascinated by it, but to attain those jhanas, especially for lay people in the world, it's not easy. Even for monks, it's not easy. But even those have their limitations. At some point, you have to let all those go and come back and develop insight into anicca, dukkha, and anatta. From my own experience and so on, the awareness of breathing until you can feel the breathing in the mind. It doesn't matter whether it's real subtle or it's not subtle, but the fact that, you know, it's staying there in your mind most of the time, even if it's just 90% of the time that you're in contact with some sensation of the breathing, that is actually quite a good level of concentration. Or comments, but it depends on how much further you want to go with that. But generally, when sensation is starting to naturally become clear, you know, if you're watching the breath and all of a sudden you start, you know, the mind becomes calm and you notice the sensations kind of just, you know, arise and vanish quickly, then that is. The degree in which you can start tuning into that, when you can clearly see, you know, like an itch and just arise, and you can see an urge arise in the mind, you can see some subtler sensations, you can, you know, just, it's just gradual, it's just kind of like gradually, it's like going into a pool, swimming pool. You know, a person can't swim, and they're learning how to swim. So, you know, they get in the pool and they're holding on with both hands, right? Because they're afraid of getting out into the water. So little by little, as they swim, you know, they get their balance and so on in the water. They can kind of let go of one hand, you know, and maybe they're still holding on with one, and they let their feet play around in the water, and, you know, and then little by little they can, you know, the grip to the side gets a little bit less, you know, and you start to gradually let go of that grip, but then you know, you're starting to float and feeling confident about it. That's the time. So this clinging to the breath is like the person is afraid to go out into the, can't swim, so they're clinging to the breath. But once the mind has become calm enough, then that fear will gradually weaken. And when you start to notice other things, and you can gradually, you know, let, it's still there, the breath can still be there in the background, but you don't have to focus, try to, you know, struggle to focus all your attention on it. You gradually kind of just let go of it, notice other things, but it's still there, you know, coming, going, other things coming and going, and it's just a balance of that. You know, gradually the other things will take speed, and at that time when it becomes clear, the breath is absolutely unimportant anymore. So anyway, that's just a general kind of outline, a guideline of how that process works. But because each people is different, person is different, and the degree in which your concentration, mindfulness, and wisdom is developed, you know, it's never going to be the same for two persons, the exact time and how much they should develop this or that or the other, and so on. As best, you know, teachers can give certain guidelines, and the Buddha's instructions in meditation can give us certain good guidelines to kind of follow, but within that, each person, their own tendencies and so on, there's going to be differences. And the second part of this question, do I have to focus on the body sensations until they disappear? No. Until the mind stops struggling with them, we focus on the sensation in order to get the mind to let go of it, especially the painful sensation. When the other sensations that aren't affecting the mind, you know, they can just be there in the background of the mind. You don't have to focus on them. And they don't have to disappear. But you're cultivating awareness, allowing the awareness to rest in the middle. And things are coming around all around it, coming and going. But the mind is not wavering like a candle flame that's not being blown. That's the awareness. And you can be aware of so many things coming and going. But when you're not conceiving them and following them, making up stories about them, they're just arising and vanishing, then it seems like they're disappearing. And when even the sense of the self will fade away. So, you don't have to go on watching any particular sensations forever. But as long as the sensation is causing you trouble, either the pleasurable one for attachment or especially the painful ones, by observing it, relaxing around it, until it, some of the sensations might not disappear. If you have chronic pain, you have cancer, you have something else that's causing you chronic pain, there's nothing you can do, but it's not going to go away. So you don't have to go on just watching it. You watch other things. You can, you know, keep on contemplating. There's many other things you can notice without allowing your mind to get stuck on any particular one sensation. But then you have to cultivate the wisdom of anatta, that all these sensations and thoughts are just, they're not me, not mine, not myself, they're just phenomena, and to detach from them. So at the end of all those Satipatthana Sutta sections, and the section on feeling, so the meditator is aware, there are these feelings, painful feelings, pleasant feelings, and you're aware of them just coming and going, but the mind remains detached and aloof, and not grasping at any of them. And if you can maintain that long enough, then even the sense of the self and the I will start to disappear. Because the I, the ego, the sense of I exists only in relation to the amount of attachment and ignorance we have toward any particular of the five aggregates. And when we develop that wisdom to see them as not I, not me, not myself, to detach from them, then the sense of I starts melting away like an ice cube melting in the water. So again, this momentarily, just to let all that excitement to kind of calm down, just momentarily, kind of just sit straight a moment, take a couple of deep, slow breaths, get back and feel your buttocks pressing the seat, to your feet, center the attention back into just breathing in, sitting, breathing out. You might, with the in and out breathing, just thinking on the, as you're breathing in, may I be free from greed, hatred, and delusion. On the out breath, may all beings be free from greed, hatred, and delusion. On the next in breath, thinking, may I cultivate mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. In the out-breath, may all beings cultivate mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Okay, we can just finish with a aspiration. Whatever merits and benefit I've gotten out of this practice of Dhamma and meditation, it continue to grow and develop until I finally attain all beings attain liberation from samsara. You can join in the chanting if you want. Imina punya kamina mame bala samagamo satan samagamo Yavanibbanapattiya Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Friends, I know that you didn't take the eight precepts, you just took the five precepts, but if you want to kind of go the extra mile, and then tonight, in order to preserve whatever inner tranquility or mindfulness that you have, try not to get get too involved with the worldly things tonight as far as possible. Of course, you might have families and so on, but maybe don't watch the evening news. It might put lots of garbage in your mind, or lots of negative thoughts. So if you can, just to eat a light, supper or something, not to eat too much. And, before sleeping tonight, try to do at least 15 or 20 minutes of, either metta or just basic kind of mindfulness. And then the real test in the morning, when you get up, when you first hear the alarm clock going off, or however you wake up, you know, when you hear that or feel yourself coming out of sleep before, you know, doing anything or immediately rushing to turn the alarm clock off, you know, just be aware of hearing, or waking. Just try to be actually aware and mindful of that process of waking up, and just do it kind of slowly, and not to do jerky movements and so on, but just gradually, you know, come up and sort of sit up from the bed and stretch and stand up before rushing into the bathroom or something, and just try to do an M&M or just, you know, do standing meditation for 30 seconds or so, take a couple of deep slow breaths, you know, before rushing off, and that will set up a nice mindful vibration in your nervous system that will hopefully help you to, when you come, you know, in the morning for the meditation, make it a little easier to get into it. And then,